The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
We're coming to you this morning from the beautiful surroundings of Avondale in County Wicklow. It's the first show of News Talk's Summer Tour 2026, with thanks to ESB, the largest EV charging network. I'm joined now by Patrick Gagan, historian and presenter of Talking History and director of the Trinity Long Room Hub. Patrick, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Wonderful to be here.
When you come here, do you feel, to borrow from Tony Blair, the hand of history heavy on your shoulder?
I do, but I'm also amazed every time I come here at just how modern it is now and how great it is for kids. And I was sending my wife pictures and saying we have to come back here in the summer.
Yeah. Now, tell me about the man himself. Will you sort out Parnell or Parnell?
He would have gone by Parnell, and sometimes older scholars still use Parnell. But truthfully, I always use Parnell now, because otherwise your students think you're just making a mistake.
Or being posh or something.
Exactly.
Now, tell me about the man himself. I mean, I mentioned earlier that he inherited the house because he was the younger son. This was a change in tradition, I suppose.
It was the way Samuel Hayes wanted it. He gave it to Parnell's father because he was a younger son. And I think it was that he wanted something different and not just to be rewarding the eldest in the family. And this was a crucially important place for Parnell's identity. It shaped his identity. He loved coming here. It also is useful for his political meetings as well. One time he wanted to outmaneuver Michael Davitt, so he brought him here in 1882. And arranged a deal that completely outmaneuvered Davitt on the land question.
Now, what informed his politics?
Well, there was always debates about that in the 1880s, because people couldn't understand how this wealthy Protestant from this landed estate was this leading Irish nationalist. And some thought it was because his mother was American and she was believed to have Fenian sympathies. But of course, there was always a Protestant tradition in Irish nationalism. And I think Parnell was part of that. And I think he was shaped by a view that Ireland and its future would be better suited by having its own parliament. And so when he entered parliament, he became one of these radical thinkers, an obstructionist, leader of the movement then, and someone who was really able to hold the balance of power at Westminster and force the leaders of the day to do what he wanted.
But in terms of his thinking, I mean, he was the owner of, it has to be said, quite a large estate. It's covered in trees now, much of it. But it must have been hard to make ends meet in an estate like this.
Oh, it was horribly hard to make ends meet. When he inherited it in 1859, it was in debt. It was in debt throughout his life. In 1883, he thought he would have to sell it. And he made moves to sell it. And so there was a huge national fund set up to make sure that he could keep it. And there was a big dinner in Dublin where the Lord Mayor had a huge event for him. And at the start of it, Parnell, and I think this showed his pride and maybe his embarrassment as well, he interrupted the Lord Mayor's speech to say, "I believe you have a cheque for me." And he took the cheque from the Lord Mayor, folded it, put it in his pocket. And that was the end of the speeches.
My goodness. I mean, it's hard to see how you would make ends meet here with a big estate, much of it walled, of course, and using local people as servants, because the one thing they weren't going to do without, were they, as a family?
No. And even when he was a prisoner in Kilmainham Jail, he had his servants there as well, and he was well looked after. And Sarah's wonderful report mentioned gold. And unfortunately, in the 1880s, that was his huge obsession when he came here. He thought there was gold in the Wicklow Hills. But by the end of his life, he admitted to a commission that sadly there was no real gold in Wicklow.
But did he make that ring from Wicklow gold or not?
Apparently he did, but that was over many, many years searching and in the water and panning in the water. But certainly it wasn't sustainable for your financial future.
He was an astute political operator, and you mentioned his obstructionism, which even people today will take lessons from.
When Nigel Farage was a member of the European Parliament, he had a picture of Parnell on his office door, and people were always amazed, why was this Irish nationalist figure on the door? And it's because Farage saw him as the great disruptor, and he wanted to do to Brussels what Parnell had done to Westminster. But then even during the big debates over Brexit, when Jacob Rees-Mogg was leader in the Commons, and everyone remembers that famous picture of him reclining on the benches and pretending to be asleep because he was blocking the Remainers from taking control of the legislative agenda, he accused those Remainers of doing the worst job at bunging up Parliament since the days of Charles Stuart Parnell.
So his legacy remains, his parliamentary legacy remains. Now, in terms of what he achieved, what can we say that was definitely achieved by Charles Stuart Parnell?
I think there was I think the great land reforms were made possible because he brought together the physical force tradition, he brought together the land movement, and he brought together the parliamentary movement under this great new cause called the New Departure. And that was incredibly radical for the time. And it made that he was able to put pressure on the British government in Parliament, outside of Parliament, with that little hint of danger with the physical force tradition. And of course, then he was able to get a British Prime Minister, Gladstone, to support Home Rule. Now, we know it didn't pass. A second attempt didn't pass. A third attempt passed in 1912, but was delayed until 1914 and then delayed further because of the First World War. But he did change the nature of the discussion of Ireland's future at Westminster.
Now, his difficulties, you talk about bringing the physical force tradition along with, a more democratic tradition. But at one point, he had to more or less get himself jailed, didn't he?
Well, things did get heated, and there was pressure on him because when you had the murder of the Chief Secretary and the Under Secretary by the Invincibles, people in the government thought Parnell was involved. And there were some who saw him as a terrorist. Winston Churchill saw him as a young man and later wrote about him and was amazed at Parnell's character and the enigma, how for some he was the constitutional nationalist, but for others he was, and he used the word terrorist. And so it was dangerous. He was walking this very fine line in the 1880s. But in my mind, he was always very much on the constitutional
side. But when he managed to get himself imprisoned in Kilmainham jail, it gave him some bona fides.
It definitely did. And it meant that he was able to avoid the worst of the land agitation. And it allowed him then to negotiate this deal that brought an end to the worst of the land agitation. But of course, also brought in major land reform. But what I find very interesting is during the start of the peace process, when Martin Mansur, this wonderful historian and public servant, when he was having these secret meetings with Gerry Adams and the others, at the very first meeting, they came to a big block and an obstacle, and Martin Mansur started talking about Parnell and the New Departure, and Gerry Adams knew exactly what he was getting at, and that helped
unblock
the blockage and keep things going. And when Martin Mansur later wrote about it, he began his essay on the peace process with Parnell.
Now, we heard a woman in the Vox Pop earlier from Sarah's report saying she didn't like him. So was he a nice man or not?
Well, that was a great interview. And he was cold, he was aloof, he was enigmatic even to his own parliamentarians. And in those last few years of his life, even before the scandal broke, he kind of went missing in action. And they never really knew where he stood. I think he was very hard to get to know. But then, of course, once that scandal broke, you know, we have Saipan, we have the Irish Civil War. This was kind of a civil war of its time. And people were firmly on the Parnell side or against him. And it divided families. And we see it in James Joyce's Portrait of the Artist. You know, this divided families and it divided political groupings. It split the Irish party. And it created bitter divisions that lasted for decades.
And of course, the church came down soundly against Parnell. Which
soundly against him. Davitt was disgusted. So many thought that this was obscene.
But
this was
it not an open secret, though, that he was having this affair with Catherine O'Shea? Because, the husband was involved in negotiations. I mean, he was very much part of the movement.
Absolutely, it was an open secret, but this is the age of open hypocrisy as well. And things are fine once they are known but secretive, but once they became publicly known, then everyone had to jump against him and attack him and condemn him. So there was a huge amount of hypocrisy there. And it was this great love story with Catherine O'Shea. She was never known as Kitty. Kitty was the term of abuse that her enemies used against her. And he did love her. And the abuse that he suffered in those final months and years and the way people turned against him, it did lead to his early death.
Yeah, and of course he did marry her once he was able to do so, once the divorce came through.
He did marry her, and he left her Avondale in his will, but unfortunately when he died, there seems to have been some kind of legal technicality, and so she did not inherit it, and it went to his older brother, who refused to give Catherine anything. And there you see the bitterness continuing as well.
So his untimely death, he was a young man-ish when he died, brought about by his own travels and not minding himself.
Yes, and I think the stress, the anxiety, having to travel around for the big election campaign, but he also became increasingly angry and kind of bitter in his language and his denunciations. And I think it was an incredibly, horribly stressful time. And I think it did lead to his untimely death. Of course, this month, this year is I think, the 180th anniversary of his birth. So it is a wonderful time to be at Avondale. But he died before his time in 1891. And he died a broken man, having divided the country, having divided his movement, and all because of a love relationship that, you know, now looking back on it, should never have been an issue.
And yet, in spite of the divisions, it greatly celebrated. I mean, the state, which would have been still the British state, bought the house in 1904.
And I think that shows the respect that was there for him. Neville Chamberlain spoke about him just before the outbreak of the Second World War, where he said that of all the political figures he had ever seen in his life or heard about, that Parnell had the greatest ability to say exactly what he wanted to say in the fewest amount of words. And there was an admiration for him, but others in Britain and in the establishment, they actually saw him as a kind of an apologist for terrorism. And they saw him as a scoundrel who publicly denounced the bombings in London and the attempts by the IRB to have these bombing campaigns. And even though Parnell would denounce them, they thought that actually secretly he was supporting them. So that's why you have things like the Pigott forgeries and these Parnellism and crime.
An attempt to link him to the Invincibles.
An attempt to link him to the Invincibles, to the IRB, to claim that actually he was the political spokesperson for a terrorist movement. And there was a huge public inquiry and a commission, and he was completely vindicated. But he came very close to having his name destroyed, and only for the exposure of those forgeries, I think they would have destroyed his reputation.
And when he died, he was given a great send-off. So were divisions buried after his death?
In some ways, they continued, because it took about 10 years before some elements of the parliamentary party to reunite under John Redmond. And no, some of the bitterness, because some people felt that it was those on the other side who had led him to his early grave. And I think it is one of those sad elements of Irish history that we do tend to split. We do tend to have these bitter divisions and fight amongst ourselves. But I think Parnell knew about his legacy. You know, when O'Connell died, they decided to erect this huge tower to him in Glasnevin. Parnell chose his legacy. He wanted a small memorial, a small stone. And now I find when I visit Glasnevin with my students, they're much more impressed by the modesty and the humility of where Parnell is buried.
And yet when I was going to school, I would pass the Parnell monument every day on the way to school, and Parnell's statue there as he points towards the rotunda with the inscription underneath, "Let no man stop the march of a nation," which we thought was ironic. He's pointing at all the babies being born in the rotunda.
And of course, that is his most famous quote. And that is actually a quote that he borrowed from the great American political figure, Stephen Douglas, who argued against Abraham Lincoln about slavery in 1858. And that was a line used by Douglas about the march and the advance of the United States. Parnell repositioned it and repurposed it for Irish politics. And I think it's one of his great quotes. And indeed, they were able to stop the march of the nation in his lifetime, but his legacy carried on. It influenced the next generations. It continued to influence the new parliamentarians in the new Irish state. I think it continues to influence political figures today, and you see him referenced by various leaders. I remember when Jacob Rees-Mogg had that mention of Parnell, Leo Varadkar was Taoiseach at the time, and he gave a speech to the Irish-British Assembly a few days later, where he quoted Parnell, and I remember the Irish Independent writing about it, saying Parnell had done the hat trick with Brexit because he was referenced by Farage, by Rees-Mogg, and now by Leo Varadkar.
Patrick, fascinating stuff. Patrick Gagan, historian and presenter of the Talking History Show on News Talk. Patrick, thank you very much for joining us in studio, in our temporary studio at the Pavilion at Avondale House.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.